Perth Football Podcast, continuing with our casual football chats in the most casual way possible. I'm Kalisho Sunwa, and I'm down here at, I think it's...
West Perth,
Cherry and Grape, I think. A lovely little secluded cafe. For those of you who don't know how this works, basically we have a chat with someone in the WA football community talking about their love of football, talking about the community aspect of it, and we do it in a very casual manner, which kind of fits with the entire ethos of the casual football company. So I've got Neil Bennett, a man who needs no introduction, but his Twitter bio says that he is a father, he is a husband, a one-time marathon runner, tortured Arsenal fan, and he knows a little bit about the weather as well. Neil, how are you?
Good, Kalichi. Thanks very much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, I think it would have done a disservice to the football community to not have had you on. We do only have 20 people, so it's really difficult to kind of narrow it all down. But as I said, it'd be a disservice to talk about football in WA and not have you on. But to go from the start, where does your love of football come from? Like, where does it start? You are an Arsenal fan. Yep. I'm assuming that has something to do with the passion that you have for the game as well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, as a kid, I was playing football a lot. Played at school, at primary school. But the love affair with Arsenal started way back, 1968, League Cup final.
That's before man walked on the moon, everybody.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's how far it was. And life was in black and white at that point. They played the local team to my area at that point, which was Swindon Town. And everybody was really gunning for Swindon Town because they were a third division side playing Arsenal, who I didn't know it at the time, but a very famous club. And Swindon won. And I don't know what happened, but it sort of triggered something in my mind. And I started keeping an eye on Arsenal, again, before internet and everything like that. And then I met a guy at school, at primary school. He was, he's been a lifelong friend. He was an Arsenal fan through and through. And we sort of just chatted away. And that year, 1970, going into 71, and Arsenal won the double. And it's been Arsenal ever since. So that's where the love of the beautiful game started. And in 1970 as well, the World Cup in Mexico.
Oh, yes.
And for the first time ever, you were able to see football matches, not almost live, but coming through on pre-records and watching England play, but watching Brazil as well, and distinctly remembering watching the final between Brazil and Italy. And to this day, I still think one of the greatest World Cup goals ever scored in that game. When Carlos Alberto smashes it in.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just a fabulous, fabulous tournament. And then football really sort of took over. So I was playing it a lot and just really enjoying being part of the football community, really.
So what was that like in London at the time? Because football's huge now. Like it's everywhere now.
Yeah.
Especially in London, you can't. Like the few times that I've been to London, you can't turn the street, you can't go anywhere without huge ads, without people playing the game, without being bombarded with football. So was it like that when you were growing up as well? Like did people look at it as a legitimate career, or did people look at it as something to really like have a big following, a big backing of?
There were opportunities to be professional footballers, absolutely, and you could make a good career out of it, but the coverage that it gets now was nowhere near the same. We used to get one program a week, which showed basically highlights of the games, match of the day, and then on the independent television network, the commercial network, you'd also get one on a Sunday afternoon as well. And that was based on the region that you lived in the UK. So for me, that was the Midlands, and you'd get the odd first division game, but then they would go and show highlights from a third division game or something like that. So the coverage was nowhere near the same. It was all newspapers and radio. There were no live games, none at all. It was all highlights. The only live game you saw was the FA Cup final. And that was a big thing. That started at 9 o'clock in the morning with the coverage on television, went right through to the end of the game. There was always the infamous interview at the end of the game with the winners slugging a pint of milk out of a bottle. It was so innocent looking back. But it was still a big thing. I mean, when the World Cup came around in 1970, that was huge. England didn't make 1974, but that World Cup final between Germany and Holland with Cruyff and Rensenbrink and Naiskins and those players, Beckenbauer and Müller. That was a huge, huge game as well, for different reasons. The Dutch were as good as the Brazilians in that tournament. But again, it was just one little snippet of football that you got, and you just hung on to that. But the rest of the time, you're out playing, and that was the big thing. You were always playing football.
Before we go and have our first break, I just want to talk about how... I just want to mention how hilarious it is that is your experience, because that kind of feels like my exact experience in 2000 in New Zealand. Now, again, New Zealand is completely different, and it's a whole world way, and I suppose this kind of talks about how backward New Zealand was at the time. But the One Live, you get like one live game a week on Channel 1 or on Channel 3.
Yeah.
And the first live game my mum and dad ever let me watch was Liverpool versus Arsenal FA Cup final 2001, where Arsenal absolutely batter Liverpool, but somehow somehow Michael Owen gets two goals and Liverpool win the thing. But it's just like that's the first live game I ever got to watch. And then like the World Cup 98 was great, and it all kind of delayed, but the fact that like in the 70s is exactly the same as it was in the 2000s in New Zealand.
It's incredible how much it's come to be saturation coverage now. You wake up in the morning and you can get it on YouTube. You can see all the highlights from the night before. You can stream it. You can and even at NPL level, you know, we're able to watch all of these games. Whereas when we started being involved in it, there was no coverage at all. You know, you might get a line here and there and that was it, but it's incredible. But yeah, looking back, that big highlight, that FA Cup final day, everybody crowded around the television. And then I remember one cup final, a friend of mine was a Newcastle fan. They got absolutely stiffed by Liverpool 3-1. They hardly showed up, and he knocked on the door at 5 o'clock, distraught. And we went out and relived the game. And his Newcastle team got stiffed again.
Well, look, we'll be right back with part two after this.
Casual Football Chats is a partnership between the Perth Football Podcast and the Casual Football Company. Casual Football Company run 25 casual games a week at venues across the entire metropolitan area. Casuals lets you rock up, play 90 minutes of non-stop football for $15 reduced. There are no referees and no one keeps scores. It's not the World Cup final, which means that you can have a nice casual game with your friends, with mates, or with strangers. Games are played simply for the love of the game. All players are welcome. Check them out on Casual Football on all social media places that you can find them. They also have an app that you can get on iTunes or on Google Play Store. And remember, hashtag play because you love it and hashtag keep things casual.
And welcome back to the Perth Football Podcast with our casual football chats conversations. We've got Neil Bennett here. Just finished talking to us about the love of football and starting off with Arsenal. You know what, before we go and talk about you coming to Australia and how it kind of starts here, who are your favourite Arsenal players? Like, who are the players that kind of got you off your seat, and why is it just Thierry Henry?
Well, going right back, the initial one was Charlie George, with his goal against Liverpool in the cup final to win that. And then a little bit after him was an Irish lad called Liam Brady.
I've heard about Liam Brady.
Yeah, Liam was a magician. He was absolutely brilliant. And for a long time, and with very good reason, Arsenal were known as boring, boring Arsenal.
1-0 to the Arsenal.
1-0 to the Arsenal. But Ian Wright was another one when he came along, sort of electrified the crowd, along with David Rocastle.
Rocky, yep.
Tony Adams as well. For, you know, I was always considered myself to be a defender, so I used to like those sorts of guys. But then when Wenger came on the scene, the whole ethos of the club changed completely. And all of a sudden you had Bergkamp and Henri and Pires and Ljungberg and Vieira and Petit and all of these amazing players. And it's just been, it was in that period when Wenger was absolutely dominating everything and the Invincibles. As an Arsenal fan from the 70s, right through some really, really horrible teams in the 80s, this was just unheard of, you know, because for years all the Tottenham fans used to say, oh, you don't play proper football, you know, you just bloody lump it and close people down and do this, that and the other. And then you see this team playing fantasy football. And it was just amazing to watch. I was in Australia at the time, obviously, but you used to see it because Fox was on and you used to be able to watch it then. To see Henry in his pomp, even though I never got to see him in the flesh, it was just magnificent, magnificent.
And you have a huge following of Nigerians because of Kanu, of course.
Yes, he was ridiculous. That hat-trick against Chelsea, what was he doing, man? I mean, that was just... He could just...
Just the most unorthodox goal scorer.
Just amazing player, yeah. And some of the African guys as well. Yeah, Toure in there as well. And Loren as well. So
Ebue turns up later on.
Ebue, yeah, well, he was a bit of a cult hero, but probably for the wrong reasons, I think.
For all the great reasons. But look, you mentioned that you were in Australia at the time of that Wenger Renaissance. So how did you get to Australia? Like, what was that like? And I feel in a very hilarious way that there are some similarities that you have with other migrants from other parts of the world coming to Australia and trying to make a fist of it as well.
Yeah, well, I was working in Germany, having been attached to the British Air Force with the UK Met Office. And I took a trip back to the UK one Christmas and I bumped into my, didn't know at the time, my then wife at a party in London. And she's from Perth and we just started hanging together, as hard as it was with her being in London, me being in Germany. I'd come back on my time off and we'd travel. We went on a holiday to Greece together and gradually just clicked and got married in the UK in 88 and then came over to Australia on a holiday in 88 with a view to, you know, sussing the place out. And as I said, she's from Perth. I absolutely loved the place. Out here in the middle of a Perth summer. And so went back and finished off my studies in the UK for a year and then came over to Australia in 90 and originally in Sydney for 3 years, then Melbourne for a year. And then we landed in Perth finally in 95. And then like a lot of new people who come in, it was slightly different for me. I already had an Australian family, so that was a bonus. And a network of her Australian friends as well. But I needed to find my own network. Yeah. And football was the connection.
Yeah.
And Balga Soccer Club had just started a vets team and over 35, so I rocked up there for training and I think it was a case of, can you walk straight? You're in the team.
Can you walk straight? Can you hold down your own when you're at the pub as well?
That's right, yeah. And that was in 95 and I'm still in touch with the guys from that team to this day. And that formed a really, really strong bond to go and play football. You're out and about in the suburbs of Perth, you know, down at Rocky and up at Yanchep and places like that. And, you know, you sort of get to see a bit of Perth as well and having a laugh. And, yeah, football drew us all together. It was a really great unifying experience.
I love that's one of the key pillars, right? Like, we talk about the third place that you need where it just can't be work and your home. You need that third place. And when I moved to the UK, I was like, all right, I need a barbershop because I don't know if anyone can cut here. Sometimes for African families or ethnic families, it's I need a church.
Yep.
And that can be the community. But I've always been like, all right, where can I play some football? Where can we have a little bit of chat? Where can we have a little bit of banter?
Yeah.
And it's magical when you find that. And it can take you a bit of time to find the right place, the right people. But when you find that community, it's nothing like it.
No, it's shared experiences. And there were Aussies who played in the team as well, and they would introduce us to, you know, Australian things. And it wasn't like it was just closed off Brits or anything like that. But obviously, the British element comes into it. And you do find some comfort in that because you are a long, long way from home. And it's nice to just sink back and have shared memories. But yeah, football was a really important part of my integration into Perth and just gradually finding my way in Perth. And it was just a huge part of those early years for me.
And so now you've found your community. How did you decide to contribute to the community? Because you've done quite a bit of work adjacent to football. And by adjacent to football, I mean like not necessarily just playing football. So I'm pretty sure you did some coaching, you've done some writing, and now you do some reporting from a granular level where you're where you're annoying professional coaches, so to speak.
Yeah.
So how did that kind of start? Because of course you've got two daughters, and I'm sure they would have been mad about football as well.
Well, my oldest daughter showed little or no interest. She was a keen sportswoman, very good netballer, great tennis player, very good swimmer, very athletic all round, but football was not something that she showed any interest in. Whereas my youngest daughter, Carla, so Laura was my oldest daughter, but my youngest daughter, Carla, at school during the breaks, she would find herself going off and playing football. So she was a bit of a tomboy anyway. But like her sister, she was a good all-round athlete. She played netball, she played tennis. She played tennis to a very good level, as did Laura. But Carla's affair with football meant that I got pulled into that as a father and as a spectator. And her first team, she was in a league that was entirely based in Ballajura because there were so many young kids in Ballajura.
That's awesome.
So we didn't have to go anywhere as underage. We were stuck in Ballajura and played other teams in Ballajura. She gradually started to become more and more interested in it. And I sort of found myself on the periphery of it. And then I would go and help put nets up and things like that. And then eventually the coach, he decided for a personal reason that he couldn't carry on, and he just handed the baton to me. I said, can you coach?
Default.
Yeah, basically. I'm English, I play football, ergo.
Of course he could coach.
You know what you're doing. So I found myself coaching the team, and at that time, a guy by the name of Aaron Tye arrived from the UK, an ex-Luton Town professional, also played for the Republic of Ireland at under-21s level, and then he had a real passion for developing young talent. And he wanted to set up, there's a buzzword now, isn't it, the academies and everything, but he wanted to set up an area in the club that catered for the better players in each team. So he asked all the coaches to nominate players to go and have some additional training with him. And I nominated two. And then another coach said, have you put your daughter in? I said, no. He said, you idiot. Yeah. She's got to go in. So I said, okay. And she went off, and Aaron's approach to football then completely opened my eyes to what you can do with young kids in terms of how you can develop them and some of the skills he was teaching them. Within 6 months, Carla had gone from, and her peers had gone from kids who were just kicking and rushing to actually building play up, learning skills, step overs and all of this. It just blew my mind. And I think it triggered, oh, well, maybe there's something to this coaching. So I'll take that on board. And then after a couple of years at Ballajura, she moved up and went to Bayswater and trialled at Bayswater City. And it was an all-boys team, as were all of her other teams. And she played for them. And again, a coach decided he didn't want to get involved in it anymore.
And the next, it feels like last man standing.
Yeah,
so
the next thing I know is I'm coaching Bayswater's under-14s team against other then Champions League teams, as they were, against Perth, against the likes of Meraki's and all of this. And again, just floundering, feeling out of my depth. So decided to take a couple of badges, community badges. And yeah, just held those. Carla moved to Stirling, again, on all-boys team. By this stage, she was getting representation at WA level, coming into contact with people like Nicola Williams, and Jacine Bonzas, Alistair Edwards as well.
Yep.
And so starting to see her development and pathway, going to the NTC Championships in Coffs Harbour, playing with Sam Kerr, playing with Shannon May, playing with all of these players, and holding her own. And I thought, the girl's got something, but I'm not going to get involved because I don't want to hold her back. So I was happy to just be on the sidelines at this point.
What's that like as a father? Because, like, you look at it right now and there's so many parents who are over-involved, right? Like, I'll give you an example. The Perth Football Podcast gets messages from parents saying, hey, come interview my 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Come interview my 10... Yeah. Come share this video with my 8-year-old.
Yeah.
And want no parts of that. So if you're listening, we want no parts of that. I don't care if this person becomes Lionel Messi. We'd rather they become Lionel Messi and we're like, hey, we wish we'd have interviewed you rather than we put this pressure on a 10-year-old. So what's that like when you're actively, or you're literally saying to yourself, don't get involved, don't get involved. This is her thing. Because it's so easy to make it your thing as well.
It is. I do recall on a couple of occasions running the line at Bayswater and becoming very enthusiastic with offside decisions to the point where I nearly got into a stand-up fight with a coach from one of the opposition teams because it was a hair trigger at my arm at that point. Came down and abused me, and I rather unceremoniously told him where he could put his flag, or where I was going to put my flag. And that embarrassed Carla. You know, she didn't want me to be part of it. She just said, just leave it alone. And
just drive me here, shut up, and let me do the football
stuff. That's right. She hated being coached by me in the year that I had her at Bayswater. She hated it. And it was very, very difficult for me to rein it back. So to the point, I probably went the other way. And I was probably harder on her than anybody else. But when it came to her selection for the Nationals, you know, enormous amount of pride. And then seeing her perform at those levels, thinking, how far does this go? You know, her peers are going into young Matildas, junior Matildas. She's not quite there. What's going on? And you want to go and talk to the coach and you want to say, hey, but you just hold back. You know, you think, I've been in football for so long now with those sorts of parents where it's uncomfortable to have to tell them she's not good enough. And the reality was, at that point, she wasn't at that level, and she needed more time. And like with a lot of female players, when they're going through their mid-teens, there's so many changes going on in their life, both physically and mentally. And it just means that their progression stalls or isn't at the same rate as their others. And you've got to accept that. And this is where it's very, very difficult to tell parents now of children that come to the club at Red Star at 13 thinking they're world beaters. And they're very good, yes, but you don't know how they're going to turn out in 2 years' time. And it's patience, patience, patience.
I had this, a friend of mine, we were talking about how really good as a footballer they were and why they should go and trial and play for the NTC. And they've been developing and, you know, been working with them and training with them. And I was just shocked at how good they were getting. Yeah. And so they went and tried to the NTC and they didn't get it. And they felt really upset and they tried again and they didn't get it. And it came to me and I was like, it's BS, it's this, it's that.
Yeah.
Then I went and spoke to the NTC coach and they were like, so they tried in the same year as Ishkia Brookin and Georgia Cassidy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, this makes total sense. I know how good you are, but these people play for Australia
and
you're not quite there yet. So
yeah.
I can imagine parents just don't see the forest for the trees sometimes.
No. I mean, when we went to the first national championships, with Carla, she'd already been there with the under-15s. WAE ended up with a silver medal. The following year, they also got a silver medal, played against Queensland. You know, they were playing against future Australian internationals and playing with Australian internationals in Sam Kerr, you know, and the standard at that championship was scary.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, to even be on the same field is an achievement.
It's a huge achievement.
And, you know, you have to accept that. So many players think that they can make it, haven't been exposed to that level, and you think you've got to see this in action up front and to see the amount of work that's going in with these players as well. That's the other thing, is the dedication and the sacrifice that they make, even at that young age. And it's tough. There's only going to be 1% that's going to get all the way up there. And the rest of them are going to fall away. And, you know, it's even to get to state level is incredible. And then players are going, but she should be in the junior Matildas, or this, that, and the other. Think, well, look, you're the cream of the cream here. You know, you are at that level. Yes, you're in the running, but there are other players at another level above you. Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes football just becomes about opinions, right? And yeah, there's other things at play, and it just becomes about opinion. So you're in the situation where Carla's developing, playing at a higher level, and you're going, I can't quite be here in this higher level in that aspect of being a coach, but I still want to contribute to football. I still want to contribute to community. So do you end up coaching younger? Do you end up, you know, getting and being a part of Redbacks? And you kind of go into writing as well. So how does that kind of journey kind of go on your path?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, I could recognise that I wasn't going to be able to contribute at the level she needed. And I was more than happy. Mark Lee was another one that had some impact on her as well as Aaron and Nicola and Alistair Edwards and Jacine Bonzas and all of these other coaches. I'm nowhere near that level. Tim Hodgson at Northern Redbacks was a fabulous coach. And he took her in as a 16-year-old when she left women's football, boys football, and parked her straight in the first team. Said she's good enough to be playing in the first team. and she hasn't ever played reserves, ever. She's always been a first-team player at that club. And he just had complete faith in her. So I would go along to training sessions and say, Tim, what do you want me to do? I'll run behind the goals and I'll pick up all the balls, if you like. I'll help you set the cones up. I want her to be involved. I'll run the line. And then committees get formed and you put your hand up and say, well, whatever you want me to do, I'm happy to do that. I'll be in the background. But I want to see this club succeed because, as at that time, the only female only club, Beckenham Angels, were just about to form, I think. It was such a privilege to be in that environment.
Yeah.
And to see them grow as a club. You know, we were out at Vasto where there was no club room. We had to wheel a barbecue out into the car park. And, you know, it was just really, really basic stuff.
It's real
stuff.
Hard yards at the moment.
It was, yeah. And then we got turfed out of Vasto and were given Celebration Park. No floodlights, no club room, no female changing facilities. It was really basic stuff. We had to retrain at Vasto for the lights for a year. Then we finally got the lights at Celebration, went back there for training and for playing. And just getting more and more involved in the committee side of it. And then the club made the decision in about 2015 that we needed to have juniors going forward. Taking one step back though, Tim had decided to take a break from the game and he very graciously handed me the keys to the first team in 2013. And that was intimidating. We had Nicola Williams in the side, we had all of these young kids who had played state level football. We had girls coming in from the UK who'd played in the then...
Was Karis Hawkins in that team at that time?
Karis had just left. She would been in the NTC, so she hadn't come back to us. Sean Billam had just left us. She'd gone to the NTC as well. Sarah Carroll had left us and gone to the NTC. But I still inherited a side where we had players coming in who played for Melbourne Victory.
Yeah.
And I'm meant to coach them. And if you talk to Carla, she'll say he didn't. He just picked the team and we played.
The Carlo Ancelotti approach. Huh?
Yeah. And to a certain extent, that was true. All I did was select the side, decided we were going to play possession-based football, and we went through the season undefeated. Nothing to do with me. We ended up going to Adelaide and we played in an interstate challenge against the South Australian champions, beat them on their patch. Fabulous. But at the end of that, I was burnt out. I was absolutely burnt out. And I just said to Tim, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't handle it. Carla was relieved because she was captain. And she just said, thank Christ for that. You're no longer in charge. So yeah, and 2 years later, after taking a year out, I took up the reins and started doing the junior football for the Redbacks. And it was very, very basic. But we knew we had to build the juniors up. If there was ever going to be an NPL, that was going to be one of the criteria.
Yeah.
Club needed to position itself, and that's what we did.
Yeah. Casual Football Chats is a partnership between the Perth Football Podcast and the Casual Football Company. Casual Football Company run 25 casual games a week at venues across the entire metropolitan area. Casuals lets you rock up, play 90 minutes of non-stop football for $15 reduce. There are no referees and no one keeps scores. It's not the World Cup final, which means that you can have a nice casual game with your friends, with mates, or with strangers. Games are played simply for the love of the game. All players are welcome. Check them out on Casual Football on all social media places that you can find them. They also have an app that you can get on iTunes or on Google Play Store. And remember, hashtag play because you love it and hashtag keep things casual.
Okay, so you've gone through this process of kind of realizing, look, I'm not going to be there contributing in that top level of coaching. I'm now going to help out in other aspects of the club, which is just the classic thankless job, right? Which
which
people, for example, like Heidi Lazaro have just been doing for years and years and years, where it's just been part of the furniture and taken for granted.
Yeah.
But then you take it a little bit to another level where you're like, you know what? I'm going to document what's actually happening. And I don't think people understand and realize the importance of the documentation aspect here, right? Like, we've got footballwa.net, And if I wanted to find out who won the league in 1972, that's where it is. There is no other place that I can go find that it's readily available. But there is an important aspect of being able to tell the history and tell it from a perspective of saying, no, I've seen it. I've written it down. I've got notes.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have a lot of recency bias where they say this is better here or this is better here, but the actual aspect of documenting it is incredible, and a lot of the documenting it is also very thankless.
Yeah,
it's behind the scenes, it's prone to chats of bias, it's prone to chats of favoritism and so on and so forth. So what made you decide, look, I want more pain and more and more abuse. I've run the line and yep, that was fun. I've coached people. Yep, that was fun. Yeah. Now I really want to play a part in documenting what's been happening in this league as the women's game develops and grows.
Well, I think the driving factor behind it was to try and get the women's game the recognition that I felt it deserved. You know, you could see the amount of sacrifice that players were putting in. And for little or no reward. I mean, as an example, the two seasons that Carla played for Perth Glory, the amount of money that she got was a pittance. It was the same as all the other players. The sacrifices that they were putting in, she played one game. They were stripped and ready to go. They were on the pitch at Adelaide doing their warm-up, and Football Australia said, nah, it's too hot. We're going to push the kickoffs back, and you can't play at Cooper Stadium because the men can't kick off too late. We're going to find you another stadium, so off you go. And they ended up playing on another stadium with an artificial turf. She falls, breaks her wrist. Because of the flight schedules, they miss their flight back to Perth, so they have to stay overnight in Adelaide. She flies back to Perth with the rest of the squad, gets in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and is at work at 9 o'clock in the morning with a fractured wrist. And all of those sort of sacrifices are untold stories about all of these early players in the W League. I mean, the girls now have got, it's still not easy for them, but they've got far greater facilities than the pioneers or the earlier players had. And this is after 6 years of the W League, you know, so God knows what it was like to begin with. So I wanted to document that. My role in my professional career was as a meteorologist, but I was involved in the media and was writing in that role as well. I thought, well, why don't I try and combine that a little bit? And a little snippet came out on the internet from the women's game asking for community writers. So I sent them an example of a mocked up match report. They said, we'd love to take you on board. And I just started doing it. First season I did it was there was me and one other guy covering Perth Glory, and we would go and do the match reports. We weren't doing Twitter at the time, I don't think. And you'd go and interview the coaches afterwards. And I thought, this is brilliant. And I can remember one day before a training session where I wanted to go and interview a player and she wasn't quite ready. So Bobby Despotovsky and myself are sitting in the dugout and just chewing the fat over what a great partnership him and Damien Murray had. And I'm like, this is unreal. This is surreal. Yeah. This is really surreal, you know. And it was just like chatting to a guy that I just met in a pub. And this is Despotovsky, who's a Glory legend, you know, and he's obviously the Glory coach at the time. So that was the thing. I just wanted to put that into place. And then the club started to become trying to position itself in a little bit more professional light. So we decided a social media presence was needed for Northern Redbacks. Tim had been doing Facebook and had been doing a little bit of Twitter, but we said, hey, let's get Instagram up and running. I knew nothing about it. Let's get the website reignited. And at that point, decided the history of this club needs to come into it. Tim had got all of the paperwork and he'd done all of the hard work. So I can't take any credit for that. And it's just a matter of digging into his memories. And this is the history of the club. And we've now got, obviously with Perth Red Star, we've got Robbie doing an amazing job on the social media.
Robbie Red Star, shout out to Robbie Red Star, of course.
But he still contacts me and asks me for, you know, who's coming up for a milestone and all this. And we've got those player records. I don't know that many other clubs have got it. But it just means that we're able to recognise their achievements, you know. And it's incredible to think that we've had players play over 200 games for us. Some players are getting close to 300 now, which is remarkable. You know,
that's 10 years of their playing career has been with one club, which is it's just amazing.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
And I think the element that I really want to kind of go in here is it's bloody hard doing that, right? Not just the 300 games, but also coming through and doing the documentation aspect, right? For example, we started this podcast. It is our third season. And this is around the time when people start to hate you. Because the first season, it's all new and novel.
Yep.
The second season, people hear you a little bit more.
Yep.
The third season is like, who was that wanker and why did he say this about my team and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, we have this whole philosophy of say whatever you want, but just know that one day you're going to be walking down the street and someone's going to challenge you on what you said. So make sure whatever you said, you're able to back it up in a conversation if you have to.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is thankless. A lot of it is, it's not paid.
No.
It is money coming out of your pocket. Yeah. We've been fortunate that we've got the Patreon and we've got the good people at Macron who have given us some money, the good people at the Casual Football Co. But that, like, that pales into comparison for the time that I spend away from my family, the time I spend away from my my partner, the time I spend away from just being in bed and playing FIFA, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this is thankless, and it isn't to say that I am slowly running out of energy, because I am, but it is to say, how do you keep that energy? Like, how do you keep that desire? Because it's not easy.
No, it's not. You know, and Beyond 90 have been great for me because they put no pressure on me at all. You write what you want to write when you want to write. So I find that the match reporting for Perth Glory on Twitter, doing that live, but then I don't do a match report on the game because I can't get it out as quickly as Gareth Morgan. You know, he's a professional writer.
Yeah.
I'm not. So I come at it from a slightly different angle. I want to try and give a little bit of an insight into what I thought were the key factors, what happened in that game, why, you know, and try to, not analysis, I'm not that clever, but just to...
You don't like XG, for example.
No, I don't. So, that's another thing. It's because I don't understand it, Kelechi. That's the problem. But then when the World Cup came along and I put my hand up to be a volunteer for that and I wanted to work in the media area to help the world media... And that was just such an amazing experience. Being pitch side, watching the games from right up close next to the players, being in the mix zone, being up in the tribune with the world media, attending press conferences,
Also being part of the Matildas when the Matildas were here.
Oh, when the Matildas
as well.
Was here, I was able to report on that as well. So without Beyond 90 and without that impetus that they gave me, I would never have been able to do that. And you know, forever grateful. And it doesn't matter that it's. It's my time. It's a passion, you know. And when you've got a passion for it, you can really do things. Getting these reports, the wrap of the NPLW every round, you have to source photographs, so you have to go to people, and people are so generous, you know.
Yeah.
They don't have to give me any photos, and some great photographers out there, and you can use that. The coaches, you approach them and you ask for an interview, just a quick grab. They'll spend time.
Helpful.
Yep. And then you've got to bash out 400-500 words and try and think, oh, you know, what? How am I going to make this different to a player A passed to player B and then player C scored? You know, what are you going to do? How can you put some... And it's forever trying to stretch yourself.
Yeah.
And then again, you touch on the issue of bias and everything. And yes, I'm with Perth Red Star, but I don't want to be seen as being Perth Red Star's advocate. I want to be seen as the advocate for the women's
league.
Game. So I try to then do stories about when the Australian schoolgirls went to Dallas, Texas last year, and I was able to interview Olivia Wood from the side that went there. And this year I didn't do anything with that because I'd done it last year. The state of the game in NPL, in WA, you're going to upset people. I've upset coaches. I've had phone calls from coaches who are not happy with what I've written. But that
can I just say that is an absolute punk ass move. Like that is Kelechi O'Sullivan speaking as a grown man here. If you are a journalist, if you are a coach, and you are picking up the phone and being upset at a journalist because of what they wrote, that is a punk ass move. That is just my own little statement. I will give you my number. You can call me, and I will call you a punk ass, like on the phone.
Yeah. So you. And it makes you wonder. You think, well, why am I doing this? And you think, well, it's not me. I'm putting my opinion out there, but it's all it is an opinion. But it's eyeballs. It's getting people aware of it. And the coverage that we're now seeing, you guys doing stuff, interviews with players after games, unheard of. Yeah. Streamer. People bag it out, but hell, we never had anything like it. You know, and you're able to watch it on YouTube. You can send it to your family. You can send it to your friends. It's incredible the coverage that we're seeing now. And you go back, Penny has been, you know, ploughing such a furrow for such a long time. You know, and she's been doing it for 30 years. And these sorts of people deserve to get recognised rather than people actually saying, your work's shit. You know, yeah, I might, my writing might be shit. And it may upset people, but I'm trying to do something. What are you doing?
It does, please. So my entire thing about this is football in WA is not big enough for it to be run without people who aren't invested in football teams. Yeah. The entire, like, you have just basically told the story of how you've contributed because you were invested, and you're invested from like an adjacent point of view because of your daughter.
Yeah.
And that is very much how football is. There is no person who's just like, I like Aussie rules. I'm going to go spend all of my time covering football, analysing football and coaching. It just doesn't happen that way.
No.
So the idea that you have people who are tangentially related to football, like you are not going to have a situation where people aren't, you're not going to have a situation where people aren't involved in teams that are contributing.
Yeah.
It's madness to think of that. Mm. And I also think that media is changing to the extent where we love Jamie Carragher.
Yeah.
Big time Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
Love watching Neville.
Yeah.
You need to be able to accept what they're saying, have that pinch of salt of saying, okay, could they be possibly slighted in a certain way? But I'll tell you right now, I really like watching Bayswater. I really hope that Bayswater win the league every single year. Yeah. But I'll tell you right now, I'm probably the harshest person about Bayswater being like, no, that was awful defending.
Yeah.
And then I've got to go show my face to those players. But I can say, listen, I'm actually a fan.
Yeah.
I want you guys to do well.
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking about you, it's legitimately me saying that was awful defending because I actually care.
Yeah.
So there's an element of almost being more critical about the teams that you do care for than the teams that you don't. But you can still appreciate the joy of the league. You can still, I can still watch Darren Urquhart and be like, man, he scored three against Bayswater, but he's absolutely quality.
Yeah.
I can still watch Annie Teixeira and be like, I would watch her do her taxes because of the way that she just plays, because of the joy that she has.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that to discount that is just really short-sighted and foolish, because we are not at this perfect situation where we can pay people who are completely unattached to talk about the game.
No, that's right. Nobody's getting paid for this. You've got the Ben at the West Australian. He's great. Matt Olsen from front of the goal, I think. I'm not sure. Ben, you know, he's living in London and he's doing this. He's got no connection to the local game at all, but
he does, but he's not told us. I know which team he supports, which I won't which I won't out him today, but he still has it's adjacent, you know what I mean? It isn't just direct, it's still there.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Football WA now, you know, Pete Simcox, you know, he does a fantastic job. Tommy as well, you know, and you guys, and I was saying to the editors at Beyond 90, because again, I don't think people realise it, I can't just publish it. It has to go up through Beyond 90. Their editors look at it and say, yeah, we'll chop that out, or can you, you know, and then they'll decide when it gets published. So, yeah, I'd like to get my stuff out on the Monday or the Tuesday, but they've got other stuff as well. So, you know, it's all part of the not the game, but it's part of the process that you've got to go through. And it's amazing to see women's football having its profile now. But it's still being done, as you said, by people who don't get paid for it, and they don't get any kudos for doing some of this stuff either. So it's just love that's driving us to do this.
All right, to finish off, listener, we've got a treat for you. We're going to ask Neil for an 11, or maybe a 12, depending on if you've got any players that are a tie, an 11 of footballers that you've seen while covering WA women's football. Now, initially, we tried to do this without any Red Star or Redback players to stop the accusation of bias, but it's kind of sort of hard when they keep winning the league. So, without further ado, talk us through. Have you got an idea of an 11 that you can pick of footballers that you have seen in WA to make that 11?
Yeah, look, this is tough because it's just been sprung on me. So your memory is always sort of jogged by the relatively recent past.
You say that, but you mentioned Liam Brady, and I suppose it's because he reminds you of Odegaard.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. As a goalkeeper, I don't think you can really go past Morgan Aquino. There have been some excellent goalkeepers. Gabby Del Bosco has been, you know, one of the great goalkeepers in the NPL area.
Loads of longevity as well.
And even prior to that, you know, when she was at Perth Glory, going all the way back to when she was at Queen's Park, Maya Diedrichsen, and she was a good goalkeeper and is still involved in the game. But I think Morgan, just for her form at the moment, is outstanding. But she's always been a really good shot stopper. Back four, well, in the centre, Kim Carroll, obviously. But I think Baxter Thew, over the years, has really started to impress with the way that she can read the game. Fullbacks, oh my God.
I know, this is so hard.
It's really, really difficult.
And this is going back, like, so I started covering the game, the women's game, I want to say 2014.
Yeah. Yeah, look, again, I think the game was a different era way back then. But I think Emily Dunn deserves to have a run at fullback. She just gives you an 8 out of 10 every single time. Tash obviously comes into it.
Her longevity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think technically she is the most accomplished player, but you can't fault her endeavour. And her attitude as well.
She's an absolute leader in the way that she can talk players through a game, and I don't think she said a bad word about anybody ever.
And I think her defending, whilst, again, her modern fullback play where you've got to get players up and a crossing is probably not the best in the league, but certainly one-on-one, she's really, really hard to beat. Midfield, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Are you playing a three? Are you playing a four?
Well, I'm going to... Play a three. We always like a three. I think Shannon May definitely in there. It's really hard. You know, Sean Billam is another one who comes into it. But Sadie Lawrence, she was a great player and still is. So I think Shannon and Sadie, and then Sarah Carroll is another one that springs to mind. You know, again, a huge risk of bias here, but when she was in her glory days, Carla was an excellent six or an eight. But I think if you're going to have...
You're just mentioning names now. I need the players. Don't give us coverage. Give us your 11.
Okay, so Shannon, Sadie, and then Raina Kagami.
That is very recency bias. I know that
I haven't seen a player like her in the league. When you've got a midfielder that can step up and score 20-plus goals, come in from a foreign country, could not speak English. She didn't even know right and left. So she can speak it now a little bit, we think. But, yeah, that direction, which was always coming from Kim at the back, she was outstanding last year. It was a major reason why Red Star won it, absolutely.
But we've had some terrific tens in this league as well.
Oh yeah! But,
and so I just want to understand the logic is just the impact that she's had.
Impossible to measure, and her assists.
Yeah.
If you were to add assists and goals, there wouldn't have been a better player last year. Notwithstanding who won the gold medal, I think Laura is an excellent player, but she did not have the same impact that Raina had.
No, we all did a drunk full-time whistle and said, I don't know how she didn't win the last year either.
Laura's a great player.
Right, so who's your front three? Now, this is where I think it gets really spicy, because the talent that we've got in terms of scoring goals is incredible.
Sam never played in the women's league.
Wow.
So are we going to... Because she played for the NTC when the NTC were playing in the boys' leagues. But she is a West Australian.
I don't know how you can have a West Australian... Did you watch her play in WA?
Yeah. No. Well, Sam is an absolute lay-down mazare, if that's the case. There's no two ways about it. The most complete goal scorer the women's game has seen full stop. Never mind in WA, never mind Australia, in the world. Yeah. She takes a long time. Some games might need 3 or 4 chances, but you know she's going to score. She's incredible. Tia Stonehill, her goal-scoring record speaks for itself. And as a winger, very, very dangerous.
I think as a winger, it's frightening because if we put her on the left and she's on that inside channel, you have to take 2 players, and now you've got the fullback and the centre half who need to actually be talking to each other the right way through, and all she needs to do is cut inside, and it's almost game over.
Yeah, very, very hard. There is another player, though, that came to us from Northern Ireland, and she played for a season, 2 seasons. She's still a full Northern Ireland international. She's a fullback, but she played wing for Northern Redbacks, and that's Demi Vance. She was phenomenal. Nadine Caldwell, her counterpart, was another one. I'd park Demi in there with Sam and maybe Tia on the other side. That's a pretty phenomenal 11.
It pains you to I can see the anguish. You're just like, oh man, this is really hard. But that's just a terrific team.
You know, I think any. Any first 11 from WA is going to be different, and everybody else is going to have an opinion on it.
That's the point.
Becky Bennett deserves a mention as well as a goalkeeper. She was a state goalkeeper at under 15, under 16, reinvented herself as a centre forward, and then ended up at Queen's Park as a goalkeeper again, and has been one of the best stoppers we've seen in a long, long time. Andy Texera is another one who deserves a mention. Renee Liotta, it's difficult not to put her in there. And you've had some fabulous players at Queen's Park as well. And Bal Kat.
You think about Jamie Lee Gale as well.
Jamie Lee Gale, and we've forgotten Kat as well, Kat Jukic.
Oh.
You know, how. Yeah, one of the cleverest players on the ball I've ever seen, with her ability to beat players. Jamie Gibbons as well in midfield. There's so many good players in there.
I swear that there was one year where I think it was my first introduction to the women's game, and it was at Queen's Park. And I walked off there being like, you don't need to tell me anything about what I've just seen. Like that Kat Jukic is the best player.
Yeah.
And it was like bombs from halfway.
Yeah.
She was an absolute menace. You could tell that she grew up with a family of boys, and she was just scrapping her entire life with the way that she played.
Yeah. Another one who's slipped off the radar a little bit, but always excited for a while, was Lexi Moreno.
Yes.
She was another skillful player. Karis Hawkins, Welsh international.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal when she was playing in the NTC, and then her early days at Redbacks as well. There's been some fabulous players in the league. It's such a shame that we see so few of them given an opportunity. Current crop right now, Caitlin Douglas and Ella Lincoln. Jeez, those two are setting the league on fire.
Ella Lincoln is just...
Georgia Cassidy. It goes on and on and on.
Yes.
So many good players. Ishia Booking... You know, it's...
Tanika Lala is...
Tanika Lala, yeah. Look, you could go on and on and on. So it's very, very hard. On another day, I'd pick another 11. It's like asking you your favourite 5 albums, you know, or your top 10 songs.
Yeah.
It changes day to day.
That's
just springing it on me, and if you were to rip out all of the Red Star Redback players, you'd still have one hell of a side in there. One hell of a side, you know. Incredible players that we've had over the years. It's been brilliant.
Well, look, thank you so much. It's been brilliant speaking to you as well and going through memory lane. Can't thank you enough for giving us the time, and can't thank you enough for your contributions to the community and making sure the women's game gets the exposure and the attention that it absolutely deserves. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening to this, there will be some games next weekend, so make sure you go out there and watch. I don't think there's a lot of games this weekend with the forfeits that have happened in the cup.
Yeah, there's only one cup game now, which is a shame. There's another story possibly on that one that we could go on for hours about the state of the game in Western Australia. But no, we will leave that one well alone.
We don't do admin. We don't do admin here at the Perth Football Podcast. Thank you so very much, Neil. You take care, and thank you for being part of the Casual Football Chats.
Been my pleasure, Kalichi. Thank you very much. And once again, thank you to you guys for all the coverage you give it. It's really helping to keep the women's game at the forefront of people's minds. Absolute honour and a privilege to be here today. Thank you.